This episode of Movers, Shakers, and History Makers is brought to you by Ace Beer Growlers, your one-stop shop for beer, wine, Traeger grills, and all your grilling and smoking essentials. Mention promo code PODCAST, get $5 off any purchase over $50 in the store. You can visit them at the location on West Court Square in downtown Noonan, directly next to Piedmont Noonan Gym. Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Movers, Shakers, and History Makers, a show dedicated to all things interesting happening in your neck of the woods, especially if your neck of the woods consists of living in Coweta County. It's a place for showcasing stories and newsmakers from the past and present. I'm your host, Clay Neely, and in this episode, we talk with the second of five candidates currently running for sheriff of Coweta County, Mr. Randolph Collins. Now, Collins is a Coweta native who started off with the Noonan Police Department and eventually found his way protecting President George W. Bush as a member of the Secret Service prior to returning to Noonan several years ago. And in this episode, we talk about his thoughts regarding how the sheriff's office is currently set up in Coweta County and his ideas for improving certain aspects. Now, this was a pretty in-depth conversation that covered a wide array of topics, so I hope you get a pretty good idea of what Collins is all about. Just a heads up, it's a little longer than our usual episodes, but I didn't feel comfortable trying to edit out too much, so I've left our entire conversation intact. So, here it is. It's our conversation with Randolph Collins on Movers, Shakers, and History Makers.
I appreciate you coming by, obviously.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And for those who didn't grow up here in Coweta County, can you just give like a very, who you are, where you're from, and all that good stuff?
Well, I'm Randolph Collins. I'm from Noonan, Georgia, and I've been here all my life, and this is home.
All right. And, typically, what got you into law enforcement initially?
Well, I think it dates really goes back to when I was probably, I think, maybe 12 or maybe even a little younger than that. But I had some family members who were in law enforcement.
Yeah.
Had a cousin who was a state trooper. And I always looked up to him, and he was like a big giant to me when I was a little kid. And
yeah, but
bounced me on his knee, all those kind of things. So when he would come around, I'd see him, and just always in amazement. So I think that started. And
yeah.
Of course, I grew up on Roscoe Road, and my family home has a white picket fence. So I can't tell you how many traffic accidents that actually occurred.
Oh,
and it was always the troopers who came to clean up the mess.
Yeah.
So I got to interact with them a lot and see the flashing lights. And
yeah, that is right there, isn't
yeah.
it? At that.
So, it's a kind of a running joke how long it goes for the fence to get hit. So
yeah.
I think we're running maybe around 5 years right now, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things. During high school, I worked at Noonan Hospital and got to see the EMTs and the troopers that came in for that and interact. So again, I just have kind of always been around it to a degree.
Yeah.
And had that excitement and something I wanted to do.
Right on. Okay.
So I think I decided early on, I think at one time I wanted to be a firefighter, and next thing I knew I wanted to be my state trooper.
Yeah. So. Well, let's see. So what got you, so we graduated from high school and then where'd you go from there? Did you go straight into academy?
No, actually, during high school, the sheriff's department actually started an Explorer program my senior year.
Okay.
So I joined that, and actually Major Finniger was one of the leaders of the Explorer Pack group, and got to know him from that stage. And after high school, luckily enough to get to go to college.
Yeah.
Majored and had an associate's degree in criminal justice.
Okay. From where? Where'd you go?
It was Reinhardt College. Now it's Reinhardt University. It's kind of grown a little bit.
Okay.
Great little Methodist school up in North Georgia.
Okay.
Spent 2 years there and got my associate's. And then I went on to LaGrange College.
Okay.
And stayed there for a year. At that point, Reinhardt was transitioning to a college level 4 year. So I actually went back to there and changed my major to business administration type thing, took some courses and realized that economics and microeconomics and all those good things weren't for me. So in 94, I was still in school, and I saw an advertisement for the City of Newnan Police Department.
Okay.
I applied, and luckily got a call, and started in 94, the City of Newnan as a police officer.
Okay. Wow. And so how long were you there?
I was there for just under a year and a half.
Okay.
Really, I think, a great experience coming to your hometown and doing that. And
yeah.
I think I'm very lucky that I did not have a major event there. It's just really, I look back on it, I think the way that I was brought on, I was actually hired as a police officer. Mm-hmm. I was given a badge. Actually, Chief Helton actually gave me a ball cap, a badge, a handful of 38 special bullets, a 38 revolver, and said, go home and shoot it to make sure it works. It jammed on the second shot. I brought it back, told him I would go and buy my own gun. Back then, you could be hired as a police officer even before you went to the academy.
Mm-hmm.
So I rode with an officer for 3 weeks. We worked each individual shift, morning, evening, and then the midnight shift.
Mm-hmm.
After that, they turned around and gave me a car by myself and said, go be this.
Yeah.
And roughly a couple of months after that, they actually sent me to the academy up in Fulton County.
Right.
And came back and knew I knew what I could and couldn't do.
Right.
And how to be a little more safe type thing.
Sure.
And it wasn't long after that, I had applied to be a trooper, wanted to be a trooper, and that was a start. And I finally got a call from the state and actually got hired in as a radio operator. Back then, you really had to have know someone or be on the top of the list to get hired. It was very competitive compared to it is now.
Yeah, now it's
ridiculous. Yeah. But did that. They sent me to Cartersville, Georgia for about 5 months.
Okay.
And then I got transferred back here to Newnan, and then I went to trooper school.
Yeah.
And was just out of trooper school just in time to go to the 96 Olympics.
Oh, wow.
So I spent my summer of 96 in Atlanta and did the Olympics and the Paralympics.
Yeah.
So that was a great experience.
Yeah.
Actually, I was at Centennial Park, and the big thing is that I was close enough I could commute back and forth, and I was on the day shift. So my mother, I was still at home at the time, living at home, and my mother wakes me up and said, hey, there's been an explosion, and I just, got in the car and went.
Yeah.
And so that was a big thing. And
yeah, certainly.
Really big thing. And once I got there, and we were trying to figure out what to do, and I'm standing around with one of the commanders of the park, and this guy walks up, really strange kind of, he was an Army Ranger.
Yeah.
And he was sent down to determine whether or not it was a national emergency issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I got selected to give him a tour of the facility. Wow. So I walked him around and some of his counterparts, and I think he was a light colonel or something. I mean, he very professional, very well, asked questions. I tried to answer what I could do, but I gave him a tour of everything, told him where things were, and I'm sure he had a direct line to somebody much higher up making a decision whether or not it was a major event or could be something else.
Sure.
But I stayed with him all day, and I was able to go and see things and watch the progress of how the feds came in to analyze everything. And it's amazing how you just saw them roll in.
Well, I bet.
And converge. And
you never see anything like that in your life, probably. I mean, obviously, the Olympics are a grand thing. So any kind of response to that is going to be momentous, I'd imagine.
Well, we went through a lot of hype to prepare for that. And, of course, I guess I was 25 and seeing it and living it.
Yeah.
Had been there prior to, because I guess the bomb actually happened a couple of days into it, maybe about a week or so.
Yeah.
So great time, great experience, and got to see things and that. But that's definitely one of the things that stands out.
Yeah.
That day after it rained, so the park was absolutely empty.
Yeah.
And I got to take him into the to the scene to a degree and see things and
wow,
the process of that. So
that's really cool.
One of the many stories I have.
Yeah. Well, so and how long did you stay at Georgia State Patrol?
Well, I actually retired with a 20-year retirement.
Okay.
But I was with the department for about 8 years.
Okay.
And I met a person who actually worked for the Secret Service and got it in and thought I wanted to be a super agent.
Yeah.
And so went through the process, which was about 8 months to get hired. Background and everything else involved, a very lengthy process. So in about 8 years in, I left and went to the Secret Service.
Wow.
Went to the Federal Law Enforcement Academy in Artesia, New Mexico for my basic federal wow. certification.
Yeah.
And then on to up in Maryland for the Secret Service Academy.
Yeah.
And I guess they were probably the most extreme. Trooper school is very extreme.
Right.
And of course, yeah, I was sure. 24, 25 going through trooper school, and I was in my early 30s.
Ooh.
And a classmate, we had 25, I think, in our class, and everybody else was brand new, out of college,
yeah. young,
early 20s.
Even at 30, that's a huge difference.
Big gap. And the Secret Service loved to run.
Yeah.
We ran and ran, and I developed shin splints during the process.
Yeah.
I've actually, one of my legs, I've got a humongous, still the bruise is blue on my shin. It's kind of a reminder for me. And I've always vowed I'll never run after anybody again.
Yeah.
But went through the Secret Service Academy, and I was really in pain for a while. And they finally sent me up to John Hopkins to get evaluated. It was my last week. And they wanted to recycle me and let me, you know, come back out of the class,
mm-hmm.
join another class after I've got time to heal. And I talked the doctor into allowing me to stay.
Yeah.
And I think it was Botox. And it was a prescription that's now no longer available. I think he gave me double doses of that. It was a muscle painkiller type thing.
Yeah.
It's been pulled off the available. So I was eating that. And luckily, I was able to go. And the final run for graduation was able to. I think I barely, within 30 seconds of being able not to, I passed, but I mean, it was within 30 seconds of.
Passed?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And.
With shin splints, man.
So before I left, actually the HR director of the state, I went up with the intention of, you know, resigning and leaving. And at the time, the state actually had an option where you could take a leave of absence,
mm.
and they would freeze your position. I was with us with the SCRT team, which is the Specialized Collision Reconstruction mm-hmm. team at the time, down in Forsyth. And so they froze my position, and he said, if you want to come back, call me. And if you don't, in a year, send me a resignation letter, and we're done.
Yeah.
So I turned all my stuff in and went to Washington, and I lived in Washington for a year.
Wow.
And I was stationed at the White House under George W. Bush, and that was an experience all on its own.
Holy cow.
I actually was at the one-year anniversary. My first assignment was at the one-year anniversary of 9/11 in New York. My first experience ever going to New York.
Really?
And,
wow.
So that was one of those big events in my life that will always stand out.
Yeah, I bet.
I was in a coat and tie and everything else, and I think I trashed the whole suit. It was filthy. I had a white shirt, and I remember how dirty the shirt was, and
yeah.
I think I still have the tie. I kept it. But if you've ever seen the pictures, it's astonishing how large that site was.
Yeah.
And I remember we went in as a group I was with. We had to walk in a couple of blocks, and you could hear all the noise of the city and the cars and the buses and the wind and that kind of thing. we walked into the facility and around the hole, and of course I think it was 13 feet deep or 13 mm-hmm. stories deep, excuse me.
Yeah.
And you look down there, but all I remember is no one was talking. All you could hear was the wind and see the dirt flying and that, and looking down at the ceremonies down there, and looking up at the buildings that were still, damaged.
Yeah.
Just a real big impact. I could not imagine of being there the day that that happened.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And like you remember the song, Where Were You When It mm-hmm. Happened? I know exactly when I started hearing I was driving to Forsyth and listening to the radio and hearing it, and the first time you think, well, that's a fluke mm-hmm. type situation, and the next time you know it's something else. And so I remember getting down there, and we all got huddled up trying to figure out what we need to do, and the state finally put on phase A, which is a high alert status. Mm-hmm. And so we went home and packed our bags to get our whatever assignment we did, and one of those deals. But everywhere I went with the Secret Service, we never stayed in a bad place.
No,
I always had the prime hotels.
Yeah.
I got assigned to go to Doha over in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
During the war, Central Command was there, and I went over for 11 days. And that was a tremendous experience. The whole time I went over there, and Bush came into the Air Force base there and talked to the troops.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I worked 6 hours that entire 11 days. So we were there for pre-planning and setup and mm-hmm. and then leaving after the fact. And he was staying at the Ritz-Carlton. And we went over there for a couple of meetings and that. But we were at the Intercontinental Hotel, which was next door. And I was one of the last guys to check in for some reason. And I got up to the counter, and the guy just starts a Middle Eastern gentleman. His voice, he said, he just apologized to me so many times. He said, Mr. Collins, I am so sorry. We're all out of rooms. And I said, I guess, what am I going to do? And he said, well, I must upgrade you to a suite. So I was on the top floor of the Intercontinental.
Yeah.
The first room was bigger than my entire apartment in D.C. And I say I got to swim in the Persian Gulf and sunbathe in 120 degree temperature and those kind of things. But
that's incredible.
Things you get to see and do
mm-hmm.
and that. And you really don't realize how much the president is at risk. I think at least two other times I felt truly life endangerment type situation.
Yeah.
And before I left, I had actually purchased some land up in Roscoe, about 8 acres of property up on a little pretty pond on Hood Road. And that just started my mind of time for me to go home.
Yeah, I bet.
I was stationed at the White House, and at the time, you were truly a number. You didn't know many people. I had classmates that were here and there, and you'd see them sporadically, but once we got assigned somewhere, I worked 12 hours and would be off for 8 and back for 12. So it was a constant thing. But I got called for some reason and went to the assignment desk and was talking to the guy. And he said, I need you to go to X-ray Charlie 15 or something like that. And I was still fairly new and knew an idea of where it was and this. And he said, you don't know where that is, do you? And I said, no, sir. And he said, the new executive office building, I don't know if you're familiar with the White House. Mm-hmm. You've got the White House and then the old executive office building that's been there forever. And across the street is a very large, one of the tallest buildings in Washington, a red brick, and it's called the new executive office building.
Oh, okay.
Where the staff works. He said, go to the top floor, come out of the elevator, turn to the right, go to the janitorial closet, take the stairway to the roof. I said, okay. So I pop the door to the roof, walk out there, and there is 3 or 4 green, large army tents. And there was probably a dozen, end up being Air Force, I believe, people stationed on top of the roof. And we had a little tent set up for like a kitchenette and things like that. And I was supposed to be there to assist them and be the Secret Service contact point for them or that kind of thing. And they were just very relaxed, watching TV, big screen TVs and microwaves. They were just having a good, you know, they were there 24/7.
Yeah.
And I was probably there for maybe 2 or 3 hours, and a buzzer goes off. And so they get up and they start doing things, and one guy goes over and turns on a generator. You hear this big, the generator powering up and batteries and things like that. Another guy goes over and pops some monitors. Some radar screens come on. And I'm looking there and thinking, well, should I be doing something? And, of course, it was a radar screen, and it showed a blip of an aircraft flying in directly into D.C. And a guy goes over and pulls a big tarp off, and it was a some type of little missile base, and it generated and it powered up, and you could hear it energizing, and it was rising and this, and I'm looking over and saying I'm about to freak out a minute. My guy goes over here and goes to a big locker, and he pulls out a Stinger shoulder fire missile. Somebody else plugs a cable into it and this and that, and they go on, and you start hearing radio traffic and that kind of thing, and I'm still figuring, what in the world do I do? What am I? What's my purpose here? And I asked somebody, I said, should I be doing something? And they said, no, just, you know, relax. And
sure, of course.
Yeah, so I'm,
fine.
I'm looking at this radar screen, and it's getting closer and closer. And, of course, we had a pretty good view. We could see over the White House, and the White House was going to alert status. And behind the, I was north, I guess, of the White House, and looking over the White House and, of course, towards the river. Reagan National Airport is, you know, very close to the White House overall, distance-wise. And there's a joint base off beside that. And I could see the Blackhawks. They had, U.S. Custom had Blackhawks at the time that were flying over D.C. because they were still restricted airspace.
Okay.
And they fly out to the west, and they actually intercepted. It turned out that it was, I believe it was the governor of West Virginia who was flying in a state Cessna. He was on the wrong radio frequency.
Uh-oh.
He wouldn't answer the radio. I guess he got within a couple of, maybe 10 miles airspace, the Blackhawks, and sent him, intercepted him, forced him down into Reagan. The guys turn around, turn off everything, and they go back, and they're eating popcorn and like it never happened. So those are one of those things.
What a life.
Well, I mean, I guarantee you at that point, nothing was going to hit the White House.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good indication. Things are, wow. Well, so how did you wind up back here?
Well, after that, I came home, and I was getting ready to build a house up on my property. And I had a small pond that I shared with a couple of lots. It was a shared, divided, and a neighbor upstream, uphill, had clear-cut his property for pasture land for a horse, and didn't do anything for erosion control. And I was always fascinated with county government anyway, but I reached out to the county to see what could be done about turning my pond into red clay, mud, and silt, and really didn't get a lot of support. There were no regulations in the time. That was the Clean Water was just starting, I think.
Okay.
But they went out and did some things. And then I just made the decision that I didn't think that was the spot, that I didn't want to have to share something that pristine and have to worry about that constantly. So I ended up buying a house in Noonan and ended up remodeling it. And in that process, I ended up made the decision to run for the county commission. That was, I guess, in the 07.
Okay.
And so I got involved in the county government, was elected to the district, third district, which is mostly northern, western, central Coweta County. It's pretty much from downtown here to, I guess, Palmetto, 16.
Okay. Yeah, right.
On that area. Served on the commission for 4 years. A funny thing about that is I had just qualified for the commission, and I had met a guy through the Secret Service. And he was actually a coordinator of my FLETC, Federal Law Enforcement Academy, class. And he calls me up and he said, hey, I'm now in Georgia and I'm the director of training for, basically it was for driving, that kind of thing. He said, I've got an open position. Are you interested? And I said, my gosh, you could have called me 2 weeks ago and I would have been down there today. But I had just paid my qualification fee yeah. and put in. And I said, hey, this is what I'm doing. I said, in, you know, 6 weeks or so, I'll know whether I'm in or out and that kind of thing. And he just said, send me your resume. I'll send you an application. Fill it out. This is my secretary. And I sent him everything I needed to do. And she just said, when you're ready, let me know and we'll process it. Mm-hmm. So he pretty much had offered me a training job as an instructor at the Federal Law Enforcement Center.
Yeah.
My dad had been sick for a time, and I kind of just, of course, I ended up winning the seat, but I told him that, you know, I was lucky if my dad had a few more years left, I think, to be with him. So yeah. I kind of didn't want to pick up and move. I was sworn in, and then my dad died 30 days later after yeah. being sworn in that. And so that kind of stands out a lot. I had just met my wife to be, mm-hmm. and she never got the opportunity to meet my father. But after that, she'd been by my side from ever since.
Yeah.
And now we've got two kids, 6 and 8.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, finally come together. I have always had the dream of wanting to run for sheriff,
yeah.
be sheriff, and serve my community.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my passion.
Okay.
When I ran for commissioner, actually, I called Mike and said, Mike, hey, I would like to have your support.
Yeah.
This is what I want to do. And he was very grateful and kind to me for that process.
Wow.
And in that, so I won and served for 4 years on the commission and in that, and enjoyed doing that very much, and moved on. But yeah. I went back to the state. I actually, when I came back from the Secret Service, I went to Atlanta. I worked in Atlanta for about 4 years.
Okay.
During that same time, I volunteered and I was a part of the legislative security detail at the state capitol. So I got involved in being around all the 3 or 4 years of the legislature, seeing how that operates, and that kind of got yeah. the process of politics involved. Got to meet a lot of great people in that. And at the same point, when I came back or started my career in Noonan as a police officer, I had 4 years of college, but I didn't have a 4-year degree.
Right.
And that kind of somewhat limited me at the Secret Service. But I came back, went back to school, had the best grades of my life,
yeah.
Paid for a majority of the tuition myself. So
that always helps the grades.
It did. I was a little more mature yeah. and did quite well in that. And so we're getting up in time. About somewhere around 08, the financial crisis mm-hmm. occurred. I volunteered to be a part of the federal DOT program for the state, which was what happened is that, of course, the state was looking at furloughing.
Yeah.
The federal motor carrier side of the program is federally funded. So the state officers are the ones who actually do the work, even though it's a federal program, mm-hmm. under a federal grant program. So I volunteered for that, and that kind of helped alleviate some financial pressure on the department. And we took 50 troopers, and we were cross-trained in federal motor carrier safety standards.
Okay.
So we were kind of a, they called it the commercial enforcement unit. We were kind of like a hit squad. We'd go out and do checks and enforcement here and there very sporadically. Ended up being probably the best job I've ever had with the state.
Wow.
I was very independent. I could do what I wanted and go where I wanted as long as I made my goals.
Yeah.
And those things, but I really enjoyed it, took advantage of it. I went and pretty much got every certification that I could in that program.
Yeah.
And really learned. I learned a lot about the education portion of it. It wasn't necessarily enforcement, but it was the process of teaching or learning someone how to do something correctly.
Yeah.
And as you probably know, the trucking industry is very heavily federally regulated.
Oh, yeah.
In every aspect of everything. So I learned that, and I actually met a guy who actually lived here, who lives here now in Coweta County, and I knew he was involved in trucking, and every so often he would call me and ask me some questions. And he called me one night, and I'd been home probably an hour, and I was holding my son. He was probably 1 year, you know, 1 year old baby. And we talked for an hour or so, and I started laughing at him. You know, it sounds like you need somebody to help you in safety. And he replied with, well, are you interested? And I said, yes. So we met that weekend for about 2 or 3 hours. We talked. And really got interested, and it got down. I said, well, what's compensation? And he offered me a job I absolutely could not refuse. Mm-hmm. And it just happened to be that the timing and everything, it worked out that I had 20 years of state retirement or state credit time.
Right.
So I was able to take a 20-year retirement with the state.
Wow.
I went to work for him, and I knew it was a trucking company. I knew what he did. I didn't realize how large it was. He ended up having 600 tractors, 600 drivers in 14 states. We were just shy, I think, somewhere around 900 employees company-wide, and I was the safety director.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And this guy was the chief operating officer, and the owner of the company had actually sold the company about 2 years earlier to an investment company. And so the investment company was buying other companies and merging. And even I think when I left, we were probably somewhere around 900 tractors. So we had grown tremendously. Yeah. And we actually even acquired a company in Canada. So I had to go to Canada a few times to go up there and learn the federal regulations for Canada. They were a little different than the U.S. But in that process, the owner... excuse me, my coughing's coming back a second, but the owner finally retired, and the last company that the corporation bought, they turned over their administration to this guy who they had just bought out, and he came in and he cleaned house. Mm. The guy that hired me is no longer there. He's moved on. He's done well for himself, but there's probably not three people there that I remember in that time. So I landed where I am now at a multinational corporation, and I am a regional area safety manager.
Okay.
And absolutely love what I do. I'm involved in pretty much right now. My role over the past 2 years is kind of involved. I was the second person in the entire company to be hired into my position, and it's involved. And right now, since I've been there, I've had three different supervisors at a regional level.
Yeah.
And right now, I am working for two. I have a split region. This is just as happened in the past month.
Yeah.
But I cover pretty much from Kentucky, Tennessee, the Carolinas, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and a portion of Louisiana. But my focus now is on the one facility. Mm-hmm. I have an office in LaGrange. I have an office in Monroe, Georgia, over near Athens.
Yeah.
I spent last week in Charlotte. I've spent a lot of time in Alabama and Florida as needed. So my job is to go in and assist other offices. But I'm probably, overall, I have access to somewhere just under 2,000 drivers in these states.
Okay.
And I have learned so much about how business operates. I work for the largest private transportation fleet in America, and we actually have the largest or the best safety rating in the nation for a trucking company our size.
Mm-hmm. Which company is it?
Well, we're the largest retailer in the world.
Oh, right. Gotcha.
So without going into much detail.
Right, right.
But we only haul our product. Either we've purchased the product and for retail sale, or we're delivering the product to the store for retail sale.
Okay.
But we have roughly around 8,000 drivers nationwide. In the past year, of course, in the trucking industry, there's been a desire for hiring, a need for drivers. And I've been part of an organization that we've hired over 1,000 drivers in the past year.
Oh, wow.
And we have a hiring center over in South Carolina that I go predominantly a couple of days every month, go up. But I'm part of the logistics team for that, preparing for that every other week. And so that's a great experience. We go out and we get the opportunity to evaluate our drivers for applicants, put them through a process, and bring them on. We call it onboarding. It's kind of a orientation.
Yeah.
Same thing as on that. But we put them through the whole process, the whole HR. And then my job, and then again, is to monitor and administer their daily activities. We monitor for hours of service, limitations that a driver can drive. Mm-hmm. Very much like a pilot.
Yeah.
Same medical qualifications. So we interact a lot with computer programs to keep up that. That's one way of doing it. You never could do it manually anymore.
Oh, God.
But very proud to work for the safest transportation company in the United States, if not in the world. And it's amazing how we have learned how to, or I've learned how to interact with people. For 20 years, I was a trooper on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And even today, I'm interacting with other law enforcement agencies sporadically because, I mean, we've got drivers. I mean, we're doing millions of miles a month.
Yeah.
And we do have fender benders here and there. Luckily, we've never had a major event with me. But we have a lot of great professional people, and it makes it easy.
Yeah.
That's the easy part about it. And but we do have the negatives that come in along, and that's sometimes hard. Yeah. But there's a lot more rewards. I've always called myself the social director because I'm always handing out a reward for something or catering an event.
Yeah.
Or it's funny, we came up with the idea of we haven't bought it yet, but we rent a ice cream maker, one of those soft serve things, and. It's funny, I go out and spend a couple hundred dollars on syrup and sprinkles and M&Ms and, you know, hand out ice cream to people.
Yeah.
Make them happy.
Hey, but,
yeah.
Can't be understated.
No, not at all. But in one of those processes, though, I mean, I'm interacting again with law enforcement, usually on a weekly level at some point. Either sometimes I deal in theft, and we get involved in that. And that's, again, kind of gets the law enforcement blood going again.
Sure.
It's really, you know, neat. And I go and have to meet with them sometimes, and some of them realize who I am. I've sat down at a table with somebody on a case, and they look at me and said, "You're a trooper, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah," and that. And so it's great, and I still use some of my contacts to get things done, and
good deal.
It's helped.
Yeah.
One of my big responsibilities now that I've kind of inherited is I'm with the hurricane response.
Oh.
So I was on the ground in the Carolinas with Florence.
Yeah.
I was down in Panama City the day after with Michael. We were actually down there. We have several trailers that are dedicated. I call it the comm trailer, but it's a satellite uplink. And I've kind of inherited the responsibility of this trailer, and I've taken it to Florence and South Carolina, and we've moved it all the way down to Florida, and it's now stationed here in LaGrange.
Yeah.
And so I have to keep up with that. But it's a humongous satellite. We can uplink into a satellite and get all the data. We connect our computers and communications and everything, and several of our managers, they will either fly in here or where we need to be, or drive in what we do. Mm-hmm. And so I've been on the ground after two of the major hurricanes this past year. Went into Panama City the day after. We had planned prior to knowing it was coming in, not knowing how bad it was going to be. Got down there, got set up. We've had two very badly damaged doors, and repair in that, but sawing in the aftermath. One of the hard hit areas, of course, is Mexico Beach. But I got into Callaway, Florida, which we have a store there, and that was kind of our ground zero point. And, you know, could see the devastation. I can't imagine, you know, having to ride that thing out. There's no reason in the world to be even stay down there and do that. But absolutely devastation that you cannot imagine. And I know the most recent hurricane or tornadoes we had here in Alabama. But I think we were extremely lucky for the what we didn't have happen.
Most definitely.
But so that's some of my responsibilities I have now. And I when I even ran for commissioner, I went to Sheriff Yeager and said, "Hey, what are your plans?" You know, when I first met him many years ago, I said, "You know, that was my goal is one day in life to be sheriff."
Yeah.
And I've always admired the man. Have a lot of respect for him. And so in 07, when I went to him and asked him, what's your plans for the future? And it's always been, well, one more term. So I finally had given the idea that the man would probably die in office at 110 years of age. I think he's probably the most respected person in the community by far. And so I guess this process started almost maybe 2 years ago. About the rumor of him becoming a U.S. Marshal. So that kind of got the blood flowing again and evaluating those kind of things. So I went to my wife and we talked, and she knew from day one that that was my intention. And where we are today. So we're one of five. I guess we're still at five.
Holding at five.
Somewhere around there.
Until May.
And could be potential for more. Who knows? But, you know.
Well, what do you kind of like about the sheriff's office right now? And, I mean, do you see any kind of long-term or short-term changes?
Well, as a county commissioner, I was able to see things and know things and more things than others may be privy to. But I think Sheriff Yeager has done an excellent job. I do think there are some things that can be improved on, and with anything. I believe in general, as in law enforcement, there is definitely a recruitment and retention issue. I've talked to a lot of the deputies. Some are, you know, concerned, and some have made their indication of which way they're going to go, and that's perfectly fine. I think there's a good group that thinks there's time for some new ideas. I don't propose any dramatic changes. I think there are several very well qualified people who were there that can be truly or should have been developed to be the next leadership stage. You know, we're very lucky. Noonan, Columbus State University, there's the Law Enforcement Command College. Those guys should be in and out of there daily. I mean, every time there's a class, somebody should be down there. Honestly, if I get the opportunity, I would probably go down and get my master's through that program. But I've talked with other department heads within the county. They've given a lot of great recommendations of some of the young people who are over there that have a lot. We've lost a lot of good people to other agencies. I believe the sheriff's had a policy of not allowing someone to return after they've left for whatever reason.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
But I think there's a few that would be more than willing to come back. And I think I would be very encouraging them to come back and start developing. To my knowledge, Jimmy Yarbrough is probably the only deputy who's gone through the FBI Academy. So that is an option. The state sends two people every session. From the state. There's been a very big increase from the at the state patrol for sending someone through the academy. Very good friend of mine, my best man in my wedding, is actually scheduled to go in the next class, I believe. Jim Wicker and I grew up together, and we went to trooper school together. Mm-hmm. And I think last I heard, he was scheduled to go to the next class. But, you know, those are some of the things that we need to start developing people. Mm-hmm. I do believe that education is important.
Sure.
And training. I know the sheriff's office has done well in training. But I think if you start, I didn't get into law enforcement for money.
Right.
Luckily, I had parents that, you know, were very supportive and allowed me to do what I wanted to do. People get in law enforcement or public safety because they want to be a part of the community and serve. And they get a lot of their compliments or their satisfaction in their job for doing a good job and helping someone. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be managed to do more of development and showing that they have a path somewhere. The department has had a very lengthy top administration. They've been in place for a very long time, and that has not allowed for a lot of forward movement up.
Gotcha.
You've got some great investigators over there. You've got some great people who are very dedicated. I mean, Mark Finniger is very involved in patrol. Mm-hmm. We've now got, I think, Captain Campbell. Mm-hmm. He was a former trooper. I worked with him in that. And I look at his energy that he has. And I've never met Toby Nix. I know you're a big part of that. And I've followed some of his things. I think Toby would make a great public relations person for the department. Mm-hmm. He's worked all the way, from my understanding, through 911, mm-hmm. all the way up. He is articulate. Course, he's got writing skills, ability to speak, and I think he would make a great front person. I don't want to be the person in front of the camera all the
right,
time.
I
don't feel that's my necessarily role. What I like about what I do is that I think I'm known for being given a task and getting it complete.
Yeah,
I don't believe in micromanaging. I don't like to be micromanaged.
Yeah.
And I think it's usually when you are micromanaged, you probably do less quality of work.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know there's a lot of openings over there. There's a lot of openings in other departments.
Yeah.
But I don't really know what we're doing for recruitment other than advertising on the Facebook page or online here or there. I've luckily enough have worked in a lot of different counties with a lot of different agencies. I know a lot of different officers. And I really want to be a part of going out and recruiting the best of the best we can get.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I retired from the state. I was making $49,000 a year. I believe the starting salary now for a deputy here is $41,000. Mm-hmm. So there's been a big change in that in the past couple of years because of the need.
Yeah.
And it's not always about money, but I know we've hired other people, I guess, from other departments at a higher rate.
Yeah.
But I believe in paying for training, experience, education. And I want to try to go out and recruit some people. And I'm not saying putting them in at a management level, but putting them where they need to be.
Well, you had talked about retention before. I mean, obviously, from what I've talked to people at the sheriff's office, we do bring them on, we train them, and then ultimately they say thanks, and they're off to either the Georgia State Patrol or a myriad of other places.
Well, I can tell you, the State Patrol has dealt with this for years. When at some point when I was here, we had 24 troopers assigned to the mm-hmm. post. And I think we don't even have 10 now. That includes management, am I correct? Mm-hmm. So it is a focus. I think the state is focused a lot on Metro Atlanta. We are Metro Atlanta.
Yeah.
We are. And we've got to have that focus. Colonel McDonough, who has now survived a governor change and mm-hmm. still stayed, I have the most respect for that gentleman. He actually started the trooper school before I did. Mm-hmm. He went to one of the military academies.
Yeah.
Very nice. I mean, honestly, this guy has got the potential for more.
Yeah.
But he's part of the team, the home team, I think. And and I kind of want to bring that here.
Yeah.
When you see a trooper, you know what you're, hopefully what you're getting and expect. One of the things I see with the Sheriff's Department, the color scheme of the cars. Count how many different cars we have that are different colors.
Well, yeah.
I mean, there are. My goal at some point is to have a uniformity.
Okay.
Including uniformity of uniforms.
Yeah, that was another one. I asked a couple people over there, I'm like, I have any questions for any of the kids? And that was one of them was, you know, with, you know, uniforms, things like that, you know, changes in, you know, trends and things like that with, you know.
Well, for many years, the blue and gray uniform of the State Patrol, was, I mean, it was wool.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that or not.
I did not.
And during the summers, it was awful. And when I did go over to the specialized units, I was in a relaxed uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily is it always presentable. It's not something you would want to go to court and testify in.
Sure.
But it does make for a more comfortable event, wearing that vest, extremely hot.
Gosh. Were you wearing wool and a bulletproof vest?
Of course.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, exactly. I remember I had long time, you know, just lower back pain from wearing the belt so much.
Yeah.
But technology's changed.
Yeah.
But I want to go to a, if I'm elected, I'm going to go to a uniform scheme.
Mm-hmm.
I love kind of the black and white like Noonan used to have. But,
yeah.
I want when you see the car, you immediately recognize what it is. We're going to get out there. We're going to be visible. We're going to do things. I came up the interstate. I worked this morning and came home from LaGrange, and we've got deputies out on the interstate doing things. And my opinion that we're, I guess this is the drug interdiction unit we have for the mm-hmm. sheriff's office. They are working south of the Moreland exit between Moreland and Granville. Generally working southbound traffic. We are intercepting drugs going to Montgomery, Columbus. We're not intercepting the drugs that are coming into Coweta County. Those resources, and you think about how much we're paying these deputies to be out there, and there were two.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw a trooper, and also saw a motor carrier unit out there. So we had four officers within a five-mile stretch.
Yeah.
I would love to give the state and put their resources on the interstate.
Mm.
They have their own drug interdiction units.
Oh, that's right.
We still would be part of that if we assisted them in the recovery. We still would get some forfeiture money if that's still a viable option. The legislature's trying to change that.
Right.
But I want to get our deputies into our communities, into our subdivisions. I can go into work in the morning. There'll be a deputy sitting, again, south of the 41, probably running traffic. I would rather have him sitting at a school or visible getting out.
Yeah.
I truly believe that I can take what we have now and put more financially. The budget's, I think the budget's $21 million.
Mm.
We have 250 employees with the department. There are several job openings that need to be filled, and I think the recruitment and going after that and keeping those in, but we can develop some of our jailers and have kind of a training session or a pre-school or academy for them to get mm-hmm. them involved and let them know there's a path to a better job or, you know, kind of like Toby, he started at 9-1 and
yeah.
at some point had a desire to go on the road.
Yeah.
Plus, most people want to do.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to take a quick break just to bring you a word from our sponsor. Folks, Ace Beer Growlers is Coweta's most extensive dealer for Traeger wood fire grills. Now, if you'd rather spend more of your time with your family instead of over the grill, take advantage of wood fire technology from Traeger today. It's as easy as set it and forget it. Be sure to mention promo code podcast, get $5 off any purchase over $50. And now back to our podcast.
I want to develop a plan to recruit, train, retention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And get people out there. I've noticed, and maybe if you notice or somebody else notices, that the school board took a great effort to put officers into every school and elementary
yep.
And that is very much, I think, to the superintendent's pat on the back for him for
yeah.
making that effort. And, you know, several years ago, the problems were in the courthouses.
Yeah.
So we've now got courthouse security, and now it's now focused on the schools and churches.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to develop some plans. I want the deputies to be visible.
Yeah.
I want them to be visible in our subdivisions. And one of the ideas I have is if a large subdivision has an HOA program, I'm going to kind of give a deputy the responsibility of that HOA. Mm-hmm. That's their point of contact. If there's a problem, they'll either have the officer's email or that. They can be the direct link. He can be the problem solver for that facility.
Right.
He can get out and actually walk and be a part of that time frame.
Yeah.
One of the other things I want to do is require that every deputy who's working during a school time at some point in the month to make maybe 3 or 4 contacts randomly to go to a school.
Mm-hmm.
Get out, park the car in the front door, walk the halls, say hello to somebody, let the kids see them. And it can be varying times, nothing yeah. planned, totally random, and you make a bigger presentation.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
And it's not going to cost anything.
Yeah.
And it's a random portion of it. Same thing with a church on Sundays. We should be seen in these areas if these are our areas that we're going to congregate in large areas.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with a shopping center. We do that now, but how do we do it in yeah. that?
Well, what do you think about any like specialized units? Some guys were asking about like DUI task force, intensified traffic units. Any thought about that?
Well, you know, the majority of the jobs of the State Patrol has been traffic enforcement and mm-hmm. traffic accident investigation.
Yeah.
At 9 troopers, you cannot function in Coweta County alone and also have Heard or Fayette County to be responsible for.
Yeah.
We had a traffic unit for several years, a few years ago, and actually won some national titles for improvement and safety. I will bring that back to some level. A lot of that is for traffic congestion. We're going to have accidents no matter what.
Yeah.
We actually, I don't know if the gentleman still lives here, but the director of the HERO unit for the state of Georgia,
mm-hmm.
During the construction period of the interstate, we made a commitment with the HERO units to be stationed in Coweta, and they're here now. I wouldn't mind seeing a local type situation where we can go and very quickly clean up an accident, document it properly, do the report, and get the traffic moving. There's a lot of time and money spent on traffic congestion.
Well, you come from Skirt, too. I mean, you would understand probably more than anyone about what it takes to document an accident scene sufficiently while still making sure...
Moving traffic.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, one of the things as a commissioner, I really was involved in road improvements, road safety. You can look and see when the interstate was built south of Moreland, they had planned to put cable barrier up. The state started trying to cut money, and they cut that out. I was very vocal about getting those installed. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the safety improvements that I fought for.
Yeah.
And it still needs to happen.
Yeah.
As a commissioner, the population has not decreased in Coweta County.
No.
The road improvements. I think the Poplar Road interchange will make a big effect on Bullsboro at some point.
Yeah.
But it's going to put a trickle effect somewhere down. It's going to be a choke point now at 16 and Poplar. Mm. It's going to move some traffic around, and it's going to be need. And, of course, that's money.
Yeah.
But we can alleviate some of those problems with having specialized units.
Yeah.
One of the things I want to do, I'm being told we have 4 or 5 canine units. Actually, I would like to put 4 canines per shift. The canine is a great tool. It's a great deterrent for crime. You know, if somebody's going to come and try to burglarize something at night and know that there's a nice dog
waiting,
talking to them,
mm-hmm.
You know, that may be a deterrent not to come to Coweta County.
Yeah.
And we're not paying a lot of health insurance or big expense salary for a canine.
Yeah.
We've got some deputies who are very passionate about the canine unit. I would love to develop a kennel where we can raise our own dogs and have a continuation.
Yeah.
And on top of that, part of the canine unit is that I've got a local breeder who I'm very close with that is a golden retriever.
Okay. Yeah, we don't have any of those yet.
Well, this would be a very passive dog that would be kind of a spokesperson for the schools, for the young kids. I've talked to her, and I think she's on board of maybe making a donation of a puppy. We bring the puppy into the schools, the kindergarten, the first grade. Mm-hmm. They see this dog. The dog grows older as they do. They mm-hmm. become part of middle school and move on. And we, you know, have kind of like an ambassador.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a drug dog. Doesn't have to be an aggressive dog. And it kind of develops that rapport with the young kids early on.
Yeah.
They see the deputy. They know that's a person they can trust. The dog will be the mending type of or the tool to get the kids involved. We can do something about having a name the dog program.
Sure.
We could bring another dog on as it goes on and, mm-hmm. and watch as it goes on. But it's I purchased one of the lady's dogs, and it's the most loving, smartest dog I've ever had.
Yeah.
And so I kind of see that as kind of my using tool to get involved and be a part of that. I think the sheriff's office has done a great job with the programs they have mm-hmm. in the school system.
Yeah.
I want to continue that.
Yeah.
I would really like to get a driver training experience for, you know, driver's ed type thing that deals with law enforcement.
Yeah.
And mechanics of how to change a tire or mechanics of a car.
Yeah.
Teach them how to interact when they do get stopped by a law enforcement officer and what to do and how to do and what to expect.
Yeah, that's invaluable.
I think that's gone.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I was required by my parents to go through driver ed before I was able to drive mm-hmm. just to save on insurance.
Yep.
But it can be a certified program. We can have deputies involved in doing that. We can use old patrol cars, and we can kind of put them in the EVOC, emergency operations mm-hmm. type thing.
Yeah.
Put them in a spin, put them on a wet track. Let them see how it acts and how to get out of it, like we're taught in trooper school or in basic mandate now. But, again, there's got to be a path for somebody to stay.
Yeah.
What I would like to see is actually a little change in the process of rank structure.
Okay.
Right now we have command lieutenants. I actually would like to see that move them. Everybody moved up a step so that each command or shift commander is a captain. Actually make a path where there's two lieutenants.
Mm.
If I'm correct, I've been told that there's supposed to be 18 deputies assigned to a shift overall budget-wise. We don't have that. Mm. I was told not too long ago we had 10 deputies total on a night shift out of a sign of 18 for whatever reason that may be. There are open slots on every shift, but I want to give a path where we have maybe two lieutenants. Mm-hmm. They can work independently. They can overlap a little bit, starting times maybe, depending on how the program of that. Develop some sergeants under the lieutenants.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of give a path for, say, an investigator / corporal position to give them the opportunity to advance, kind of an automatic situation. I know there's being a commissioner, I know that there's automatic steps for pay increases for being there to keep people going. It does come back down to pay at some point.
Yeah, but unfortunately. We can't be John's Creek, can we?
No, we can't. We don't. But we are very lucky. I've looked at the neighboring departments. We're still pretty high.
Yeah.
Even for, you know, Fayette County in that portion of mm-hmm. that. So there's got to be some attraction to that and there's some desire.
Yeah.
We have a great reputation as the base.
And that's huge.
And it can continue.
Yeah.
I don't see anything. I'm not going in and I'm not going to clean house. I've heard the sheriff say that, you know, people are fearful for their job.
Yeah.
There's no reason for that.
Yeah.
Why would I get away from experience and try to change something?
Yeah.
All I want to try to do is develop.
Yeah.
So there should not be a deputy scared for their job. There may be some changes here and there, some realignment here and
always
there.
Always is.
It always happens.
I mean, yeah.
And it, you know, it's happening now as the senior management's retiring. We've had a couple of lieutenant colonels retire in the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these guys who've been majors need to be moved up and do things. You've got to develop your next level and even the lower level before that to get to the point of where we're going to be.
Or give them a taste of that upward.
Correct.
You know, let them
and
know.
And I'm a firm believer in seniority matters.
Yeah.
But you've also, once you're there, you've got to come to work to work. You can get very complacent if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to have managers. What I've learned in my current role is I'm being developed as a manager. I'm being sent to classes to learn how to deal with people, how to resolve conflict. I was a crisis negotiator for the state on the SWAT team. one of those things that you first were taught is to give the guy a chance to resolve the problem himself.
Yeah.
And that works in the same way. You've got to go to a person. I plan to sit down with every single employee in that department and understand what they want to do for the future.
Yeah.
Where do they want to be? I'm sure there are several people over there that one day want to be sheriff.
Yeah.
There's no question in my mind. I'm not scared to help develop them to get to that point.
Yeah.
It makes me a better leader if I've got a team that I don't have to sit back and worry about. You know, everybody's got different skill sets, some more than the others.
Yeah.
You try to develop people who have got the poor to make them equal. And the same way with the other things. I mean, it works both ways. It can be a ladder up, and it can be a side motion, too.
That's true. Well, I mean, I think you've even said it. You, I guess, one of the five, you're coming in from that isn't immediately working for a law enforcement agency at the moment.
Like. Correct.
So what have you kind of done to kind of prepare in terms of assuming the role of sheriff, where a lot of these guys are kind of, well, I see what happens here.
Well, let me tell you, I've talked to a lot of people, including the county. I've talked and asked them, what do you feel are the needs of the county, right. The department? We're a $21 million department. We're somewhere in there. I don't know what this upcoming year's budget is going to be, but I've heard $21 million. I would like to install a comptroller position, an internal accounting administration person, who... right now, they're sending the bills over to the county, and they're paying them and that kind of thing. It may help alleviate some issues there. We're going to get more involved here.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that we spent a lot of money last year on overtime.
Okay.
We were over budget, and that can be part of the retention issues there. To be honest, I think we spent just less than $1 million on overtime last year. Some of that money can be given to base pay.
Mm-hmm.
To up that, and it's not healthy for the employee to be sitting there all the time. Absolutely not healthy for that person. You're putting them, they're already going into harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're already fatigued,
yeah.
It's not going to help the situation. I've been there, the Secret Service. I mean, I worked 12 hours, was given 8 hours off, and expect to come back 8 hours later and work another 12-hour shift.
Yeah.
So I would be getting off it in the morning and coming back in that night, or vice versa, and it was a leapfrog event.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can get burned out quickly.
Yeah.
But I think the same way, if we've got more people there, it's going to make the job easier for everyone.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know one of the candidates was talking about building a new jail.
Mm.
Well, when I was a commissioner, we bought the adjacent property for expansion. So there is things there, but I do know that will be a major expense, probably the largest expense we'll have had in the future.
Yeah.
The current jail was built because of a federal mandate.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Overcrowding and issues at the old jail.
Mm-hmm.
And so this jail is getting some age.
Yeah.
We're either going to have to build another pod, go up, or at some point build a whole new facility.
Yeah.
But that's going to probably take another splosh. Or something along those lines.
Yeah.
As a commissioner, I was part of the fire department expansion.
Okay.
So that came in at a really tough time in early, late, 2008, 2010.
Yeah.
We've gone from a one fireman per truck to two or three firemen per truck now.
Yeah.
I was not involved in the EMS transfer, but that was something that I think that was needed. And it's an expense, but it is a frontline healthcare issue.
Mm-hmm.
In trauma situations, you want the best people there, and you want the quantity of people to get there.
Yeah,
we've got some great equipment. We came through there when I was there. We dealt with some management issues there. That changed, and it's evolved again.
Yeah.
I think our chief just got a great state accommodation.
Yep.
And so we are recruiting great people there. I know there's some retention issues there too now, but that's in general with most places. But you can't also always solve that with money.
Yeah.
It's a matter of patting somebody on the back
and
giving them the pat on the back that they deserve.
You've been here your entire life. What are the biggest challenges you see kind of facing us in the future? Not only, you know, from a personal standpoint, but also from the sheriff's office. Like, what do you...
Well, you know, many people move here because of the quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the many years, Noonan has been a gem. And we're now being exposed to that.
Mm-hmm.
So people are moving here for certain reasons. And a lot of that is still the commuting to easy to Atlanta. Yeah. The purchase price of homes is very good. But we're dealing now with congestion. Yeah. We're now dealing with crime. And we've got to be proactive. I don't think we've got to be running around here, in combat gear or anything like that. But we've got to be visible.
Yeah.
We've got to help. We've got to be ambassadors to our community. We've got to provide our people with a service. They've got to feel safe.
Right.
High crime is going to be a very big deterrent for economic development. I mean, what large company would want to come here if we're having crime? If you look at Fayette County as an example, many years ago, Fayette County was a very high per capita. People flocked there for good schools.
Yeah.
Well, now they're leaving Fayette County to come here because we've got good schools. You can buy a bigger house for the same amount of money you sell your house over there and that. So there's a draw.
Yeah.
We have a great, I look back at Stan Thomas and what his vision was, and we owe a lot of gratitude for Stan Thomas for building Ashley Park and bringing us some great points of interest.
Yeah.
We have people from Carroll and Fayette County and Troop County that come here and shop. But if you can imagine, think about this, many years ago, if you look at Atlanta, that was the destination to go shop. And then it was Shannon Mall. And now it's spread out. Now it's Coweta.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you didn't know, but Troop County and LaGrange is developing a massive commercial aspect down there. Yeah. That's going to be the new and the best. People are going to go there. We're going to lose some sales tax if we're not careful.
Yeah.
So we've got to make a safe environment. We've got to be visible. We've got to make traffic. And it's not just the sheriff's department. It involves the city council,
mm-hmm.
the county commissioners. I want to be very involved in all those categories as I feel like I was as a commissioner.
Yeah.
Open door policy. I think I got a lot of compliments, is the correct, of being able to be called, take the call, and getting what they needed done.
That's the big role, too.
I've had simple calls of somebody calling needing a sign put up for, slow down for children. Mm-hmm. They would call me that morning. That afternoon, the sign was installed. We had some great people that I worked with the county, with the camp, with the road department, and they were very willing to help as needed. Simple little things.
Yeah.
Simple little things is enough as a call back or a follow up.
It's huge. Yeah.
Well, tell me something. As a business, you're running a business. You're selling ads in a newspaper. Somebody comes to you and wants to buy an ad in your newspaper, and you wait, and these people say the nursery or the county garden down here that's selling flowers. Plans to have a big sale coming up soon. He wants you to run an ad, and you put the ad in 5 days late. Is he going to come back to you and try to buy something from you again? Some of the problems I'm hearing is it's reoccurring.
Okay.
I've had many people say they've had a theft or burglary. Just recently, a friend's car was stolen out of their yard.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to.
Yeah.
That. They called, reported it. They did not hear a call back for 8 days.
Man.
The theft was advertised through the county's Facebook page 10 days after the theft. How quickly are you going to be able to recover a car? Do you want a car that's been gone for 10 days? I could see an hour.
Right.
Right? I don't think you want that car back if it's been gone for 10 days.
No.
And I said, well, did they contact you? No. Did you call them? I called repeatedly. The investigator who was assigned the case was on vacation for a week. How many investigators do we have at the sheriff's office? Why wasn't it not given to someone else? Why are not we not covering for someone else? Mm-hmm. Why are we not making that a priority? I've got a gentleman down in Sonoy who says that he had a nice lawnmower. It was stolen. He knows where the lawnmower is. He knows who has it. He's told him who that. He's never even gotten an interview or from the initial deputy that came out for the initial report.
Mm-hmm.
No follow-up. He still knows where the lawnmower is. I guess he just hadn't had the, you know, to know to go yeah. and try to recover it and get into a situation he doesn't want to get into.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, I'm hearing that more and more. And it's kind of the thing about my customer or my victim advocate we have at the state court and the DA's office. Yeah. We can have the same situation here. I can't have the same deputy or investigator working 24/7, but I can have a point of contact for that person. It can be a customer service representative type situation.
Right.
They call in, they take the message, they ensure that they that person then, it could be, a, I mean, simply as a secretarial position. They can talk to the investigator, they can call back, they can show interest, they can provide the report. Have you ever tried to get a police report from a department? Mm. Even a crash report?
Oh, yeah.
It's a process, am I correct?
Yeah.
Well, in my line of work, I have to do those things too. I can call someone and they'll either email it directly to me. Mm-hmm. I can go online and get it, pay a fee here and there. Some people don't charge fees. But if you're a Coweta County taxpayer or resident, you're paying taxes. I'm going to get that report in your hands without even having to ask for it. Even if you have to sign a little waiver beforehand for mm-hmm. release of materials, we're still going to redact and protect the information that's on there.
Sure.
But that saves you from having to take time off to go to the sheriff's office, wait for 20, 15, an hour or whatever to get a report, to give it to your insurance agent. If you've got a good insurance agent, he would do it for you, correct?
Right.
You would think,
yeah.
right? But those are the little things that I see that matter.
Yeah.
Someone calls me. I mean, I've got the sheriff's cell phone number, same way. My number's not changed. I'm not going to change my number
yeah.
in that. And if I give it to you, you know, you've got a direct contact.
Sure.
When I was a police officer here in Noonan, I knew where people lived. We'd get a call, and I'd say, oh, I know that. Can you give me the name?
Mm-hmm.
I knew what car they had in the driveway.
Yeah.
And you can't do that now. I mean, that's impossible with 145,000 people. And
yeah.
I've been out and putting up signs here and there. And there's more subdivisions today that I didn't know. And so, I mean, we're growing.
Yeah.
We've got precincts here and there. We need to make them functional. My kids now are going to the rec center. Mm-hmm. We're going to Central Athletics out there, Central Center.
Yep.
And there's a precinct right there. You see them coming and going. But I've heard stories of theft in the parking lot there.
Man.
And, you know, a simple drive around, get out, say hello. I get a lot of people that I've noticed is that when deputies and even when I was a trooper, we go out and eat, you know, you walk into a restaurant, you're going to be immediately recognized.
Yes.
So, you know, I want to have a presentable uniform presentation. I want the deputies to make eye contact, have that conversation, especially if somebody you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be a focal point of this community.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that some things that I want to improve on, that they're simple. Doesn't cost a lot of money to do that.
Yeah. No.
We need things. I know that we're getting equipment now with Splosh, that we're getting better vehicles. You see the Tahoes and those things. It's probably the best vehicle we could ever count on. It's a safe vehicle.
Yeah.
But they cost a lot of money. Have you tried to buy one lately?
Mm-hmm.
And plus all the other equipment.
That goes in it, yeah.
I want a light bar on every patrol car.
Yeah.
I want them to have some uniformity. I think there's a need for a police car, a police truck, an SUV, other things that we need to have, and it needs to be uniformity.
Mm-hmm.
Great equipment. I would like to see some night vision readily available for a night shift type situation.
Yeah.
We have a helicopter. I'm not sure what the state of it is.
Yeah.
I would think at the point that it's probably getting to the end of its lifespan. So those are the things you got to think about and count forward. We had the major event here, and we had, you know, we had other agencies come in, and they brought in, if you're familiar with the Bearcat,
yeah,
the armored car. The Noonan Police Department has been excellent. Buster Meadows, when I started with, I worked with Buster, he was a sergeant. He's now the chief, and he's taken that department from way back revolvers, broken revolvers, yeah, to the state-of-the-art,
yeah,
what we have now. He's gone out and gotten equipment from GEMA, ex-military. We have an ex-military truck out there.
Yeah.
I'd like to have two of them.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily something for intimidation, but in that type scenario, it is intimidation. It's a force factor, multiplier. And you know that you come out and you're going to do business. As a trooper, I was assigned to a mobile field force. That's the guys that are in the garb and the heavy gear and the sticks and the going out and you're doing the marching and the protest. I was a part of the G8 summit.
Really?
Down in Brunswick during that. I was on a specialized team that went around and we were a mobile field force type thing. We were in the cars and we had the garb on and hot and miserable. And we... honestly, the location had a lot to do with the safety of that being an island.
Right.
But we had a lot and a lot of people there to be able to respond to that. And it spent a lot of money.
Yeah.
But we can have those resources very easily by going through GEMA and getting those things and having it ready. Buster has done an excellent job with that. I remember we had one computer in that department when I was an officer there. One computer.
Yeah.
And... I actually would go home and I had a word processor. I didn't have a computer, but I had a word processor and a typewriter, and
yeah,
I would write my reports on that and, you know, come back and present those things. But I think that the department can do tremendous economics,
yeah,
for this community by being a strong department, having the people out there. Again, I've never met Toby Nix, but I've read his articles.
Mm-hmm.
He brings, in his words, the truth and the perspective of that. And I've always learned, and I learned this in a county commissioner's class, is that you need to be the first one to tell the story and be it correctly. You, mm-hmm, know that as a newspaper person. If you get your story out there and you're factual, you're going to win the situation.
Yeah.
There's bad news people. There's no question about that. They want to turn the situation, make it look law enforcement bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that anybody out there is intentionally a bad law enforcement person.
Yeah.
There's always circumstances to this and that, bad situations, no-win situations, or they're not properly trained for the situation at hand.
Yeah.
So you've got to be able to identify those things. I think one of the big things now that I see, and I remember years ago going into Cobb County Sheriff's Department, taking someone into jail and having to fill out a medical history release form for this person. First thing I ever saw. But that's one thing that is our liability. We bring someone into the jail who has got a major event, either caused by their incident or previous.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to have somebody that needs to be in intensive care.
Right.
You know, we can arrest people by warrant,
mm-hmm,
later date.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we kind of currently do. I'll ask, what's the situation with that guy? And like, well, we know where he is. We'll let...
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
He's not going to be leaving that room anytime soon.
But, you know, there's a lot of expense in the Sheriff's Department, and it does come from medical care of people incarcerated. And we've got to look at that. We've got to look at the court system. I'm a firm believer that the job of a law enforcement officer is to go in, resolve the conflict, do what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody needs a ticket. And I say I come from a department that pushed us to write tickets,
yeah,
just because they wanted numbers to justify comparing to the other department.
Sure.
Sometimes you have to write a person a ticket to make them correct, excuse me, correct themselves by force. Buy a ticket or a fine, but we have excellent judges that have a great concern for this community. I have no doubt that that's still continuing. And the decision that a judge has made, I've never had an ill fate of them making a decision either in my favor or against my favor.
Yeah.
And I've actually spoken up and said, you know, I believe this person has learned his lesson, and would you give forgiveness to the court, to the person? And then I've had some people that needed to be locked up
sure.
and never see daylight again.
Yeah.
And it's a two-way situation.
Yeah.
The way I tell my people, and it goes back, I guess, my first day with Jerry Hilton at Nuna Police Department. And something I've lived from that day forward, he told me, he said, if I ask you a question, I want you to tell me the truth. And I have lived by that my entire career in law enforcement. And that stood out to me more than the man was very, I don't know if you ever met him, or very tall, very easygoing. I mean, he was always in, you know, a button-down shirt and was not in uniform. I think I saw him in uniform a couple of times. We've got a group picture. I think I see him in uniform.
Okay.
But he was very quiet, very humble. He was not a person who wanted to be the frontline guy.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of respect for that. And after he retired, he actually worked at my father's clinic.
Oh, okay.
As a security guard. And I probably had more conversations with him on the back sofa at the back door of the building than I did actually working for him.
Yeah.
And reeling out really, you know, a person that he was. You don't necessarily see that sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunity here. My kids are 6 and 8. I've got a desire to keep this community safe. I've got a lot of people here that I know and mm-hmm. I care about. People want to come here, and I would love to be able to build a wall around Coweta County and say no more. Can't do that. Business owners don't want us here that.
Yeah.
But we still have that integrity that we have, that desire for people to move here, that hometown feel.
Yeah.
Same thing with the movie industry coming here. We've got to be open for that. I'm willing to do all those things, and I want to be a part of the community. I want to, and I have been, I feel like I have, but I enjoyed being a county commissioner and things like that. It's funny that, you know, you're a county commissioner. It's been 8 years since I was on the commission, but the things that I initiated are just now coming to light.
Yeah.
It takes that long for government to do something, and it's ridiculous. Private sector, I can do something very quickly.
Right.
And I like the fact that I feel like I have a diverse background.
Yeah.
I have 20 years of local, state, and federal law enforcement. I've been elected to an elected position in this county, and now I work for a business that does care about their people, but does also care about making a profit and doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
And we're under fire with another company that does something better. This past year, we had a 40% increase in online sales
mm-hmm.
because we changed our perspective.
Yeah.
Law enforcement has got to change just like anything else.
Yeah.
And I hope I have the vision. I have the desire. I know I have the desire. I've always said I hate the campaigning process of it.
Yeah.
I look forward to the day if I'm elected that I get in there and do things. And I want to be able to earn my vote. I tell everybody I'm not, you know, I want to earn your vote. That's really important to me.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited. I've kind of gotten the idea this day was never going to come. We've been back and forth on the date.
Yeah.
I was hearing November. I was happy with that. And the next thing I know, it's moved up. I said, oh, Lord, I've really got to get busy. I work full time.
Yeah.
Last week I was in North Carolina. Before that, I spent some time in Florida, Alabama. I'm the go-to call guy. If I need something, I'm the guy that goes. I'm the fill-in guy here mm-hmm. and there. So it's hard for me. My kids are active in sports, so being involved with them and being able to get them where they need to go, and I don't have the luxury of going and having lunch every day and being seen and that.
Yeah, that's difficult.
It is, and but I'm happy with what I've done. I'm very happy of what I've been contributed to. Mm-hmm. I have not asked anyone. I've not gone out and asked for money. The contributions I have gotten have been either mailed to me, and I've been surprised every time I go home. There's an envelope. I'm shocked.
Yeah.
And I would never have thought of this person thinking of me.
Yeah.
And that, and then, you know, it's just, it's great. I'm proud every time I put a sign up somewhere. And I'm trying to be, I think my name's out there.
Yeah.
I think I've got a great shot. I'm going to do my best. If I'm elected, I promise you I'm going to earn the job. It's just something I've wanted to do. So, I mean, I've just... I'm grateful for the people who are supporting me.
Yeah.
And I'm meeting people that I have never even heard of or met before. And it's amazing how you click with somebody very quickly.
Yeah.
And you hear what their concerns are. And I tell them, and, or tell them my ideas, and they see it.
Yeah.
And every single deputy can make a difference. A jailer treating someone correctly. I just met a guy on Facebook. He was started off bad as a juvenile.
Mm-hmm.
Had been in juvenile, had been in jail and everything else. And I was reading a story, and he was able to get the release of the first time offender. So he got all that removed.
Yeah.
He's now, I guess today, he was being sworn in as a correctional guard at a facility that he was actually housed in.
Nice.
It is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we've got bad people, and we've got people who are good, and they do something very simple,
right,
and it becomes a problem. Doesn't make them a terrible person.
No.
And it's like anything, we've got to have some forgiveness, some opportunity.
Yeah.
I look at some other stories. I think you did one of the graphic artist, mm-hmm, that was at the camp.
Yeah, yeah.
Follow him on Facebook, and what he's doing, and I think he's found the love of his life, if you're keeping up with him.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at his work and his talent. It's,
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. There are a lot of people out there like that at the camp. I mean, you talk to him, and it's just astonishing.
Well, you know, Bill does an excellent job out,
yeah,
there. I've had inmates that have been out at the State Patrol Post who have been through there. They learn a trade.
Mm-hmm.
We're not high risk. We've got people who want to do their time, learn something, and get on.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we've got people who don't care. He gets rid of them.
Yeah.
He'll pick them.
They're easy to find.
Yeah, but, I mean, if he got somebody bad, he's going to get there.
Yeah.
They do a tremendous amount of work for this community that people don't realize.
Mm-hmm.
And from the roads to, you know, everything else, but we're growing.
Yeah.
When I was a commissioner, we had complaints of somebody being in the subdivision. They didn't want inmates in the subdivision. You know, cutting grass or cleaning up a fallen tree or whatever else.
Yeah.
But they do provide a great service.
Heck yeah.
And they're human beings. And, you know, I think really having kids of my own finally,
mm-hmm,
I waited late in life to get married and have children. And they have changed my perspective so much on life.
Yeah.
I could not imagine being without them and watching them grow and seeing things. And my son is great to watch. I think everybody sees that I'm a image of my father.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a very much an image of me.
Yeah.
You know, I think when I was growing up, I was probably considered a hellion.
Yeah.
In that, but I think at some point I realized where I wanted to go, and what I wanted to do, and I'm happy where I'm at,
yeah,
now. I think I've got a great opportunity. I went to my employer 2 years ago and said, hey, this opportunity is coming up for me. I'd like to be able to go after my lifelong dream.
Yeah.
And they have absolutely been the most encouraging people.
That's great.
It is. Last year, I carried over vacation time so that I have more time to concentrate here. I've had a gentleman here tell me that I should quit my job and run full time if I was going to be able to get it. And, you know, I think that what I've learned, even in the past few years, with my family and with my job, is strengthen what I want to do. Yeah. And, you know, I just, I see it as a great position.
Yeah.
I would be happy, you know, to have the job. I will support the department if I'm not in there, if I don't win. But I really, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I, you know, we never had a very long conversation here and there, but you have always supported law. I see it in the paper, and that's very important.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it's nice to have part of the community, and this community does support its law enforcement people.
Yeah.
And
And it's not difficult here, just because I mean you're dealing with top notch people. I mean, if we were in any other place that might have had, you know, some questionable leadership or, you know, I mean, that's the role of the newspaper. I mean, you report on what's there. And I mean, in my experience anyway, we've got a pretty good thing going down here. So, I mean, there's not a lot of light, you know, that needs to be, you know.
When I worked for Noonan, we relied heavily sometimes on the county for backup.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of the opposite. I mean, I think the city of Noonan has actually grown to be a stronger department technology wise and that, and you know, I'm seeing more of them. That has a lot to do with the city management, city manager, those kind of things.
Right.
You know, I look back in my time again, this county really doesn't know Theringay.
Right.
Long term county administrator. That man truly has the well-being of this community. He has kept the county financially stable for many years.
Mm-hmm.
We had a great bond rating when I was a commissioner. For 3 years of the most financial time, we kept the millage rate flat. We didn't have to go out and furlough somebody. We did make some changes there.
Yep.
But honestly, people... It's like the Mike Yeagers, the Theringays, going back to even Dick Boland as a city manager here, of what they did to keep this community stable and grow it.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody here that's trying to pull it down.
Yeah.
And it's a great community.
Yeah.
It's my home. It's our community. It's our homes. We've got children who, you know, next generation.
Yeah.
I think, you know, your wife's second or third generation in this building. Is that correct? Fourth.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of that. My family goes way back in this community. My mother's side, one of my grandfathers was actually a blacksmith here, and he was at next door. He had a stable.
Yeah.
He goes that far back through the Chronicles.
I love it.
And this is my home. I would like to see things stay the way they were.
Yeah.
I'd like to be able where we could keep the doors open. Didn't have to lock the doors, but those days are over. You know, you read stories about the noise of downtown being vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
Those are kind of good. I mean, those...
Great problem to have.
It is.
I mean, it really is.
When I was a child, young, after school, I'd leave Elm Street, go to my dad's office. I'd walk downtown from there.
Yeah.
And I'm talking elementary school. And I would go around. I could go to Lee King, go to get a soda, wherever else. I knew all the stores. The people knew me. Used to have the library where it is now, finally returned there. But on Saturdays, I'd go to the theater and watch, you know, a movie on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
You could call home for 10 cents and, you know, all those, come pick me up.
Yeah.
During church, we would leave church and go to, on Sunday mornings, and between Sunday school and church, and go to Lee King and get a soda,
right,
and go and be back in time to, you know,
yeah,
get ridiculed for eating candy up in the in the balcony. But you know, this, we've got a lot of great people here, and as we're getting there, and it's the same thing. And I just I truly believe that I, as the sheriff, can expand on that in a great pattern, and do some great things.
Yeah.
And we've got great people over there. There's absolutely no questions about that.
Yeah.
There should be no one over there, you know, fearful for anything.
Yeah.
Other than doing your job.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's
cool. Well, thank you so much. I mean, this has been a fantastic conversation. I mean, like you said, we hadn't really talked before, but it just to hear your passion for not only community, law enforcement, all that, just, I mean, it's really...
Well, it's just, again, I got in it because I wanted to. I liked the excitement.
Yeah.
I would go to work, and I would work over, and I started off as a trooper in LaGrange and kind of come home, and I'd see a car, and I ended up stopping it, and... 8 hours later, I finally get home after working 8 hours, and I would have done it for free.
Yeah.
And in that, but once you finally get a family and you got to make a commitment.
Yeah.
And yeah. New soccer shoes and
mm-hmm.
baseball glove this year and all those great things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, it's great we've got that. I tell you, I'm really excited about Jim Gay coming in as the rec.
Yeah.
When I was on the commission, I heard many times many complaints about it and couldn't see it. Now I see it and know where it needs to go and and those things. And I think he's got a great plan.
Yeah,
I know his ethics are great. And the same thing, we've got a lot of senior people at different levels that are at retirement age in those. And I think we've got some great people who've stepped up.
Yeah.
And I'm fabulous. I have never gone back to a county commissioner meeting since I left.
Yeah.
And in that, and I read it in the paper and hear this and that, and I still have some conversations here and there with those. I know where the heart of our commissioners are.
Mm-hmm.
I know where the heart of our city council are. I'm learning some of the guys down in Sonoy and the mayor of Turin, and I've met him really recently, had some good conversations, and know what their concerns are.
Yeah.
When I was a trooper, I worked 16 in Sonoy a lot. I was down there not long ago, and I was talking to a guy, and he knew who I was, and he knew who I was before I knew who he was, and he actually had my cell phone in his phone, and those kind of things. So, you know, it's good. I went down to Mr. Crook down in Sonoy, and I had met him years ago, and I walked in and told him my name, and he knew more about me than I could ever imagine just by, you know, you did this, this, and that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had a great conversation, and he told me about his business and how he's developed and what he's done, and the man is, I guess, in his late 80s.
Yeah.
And he's so vibrant. He was working the cash register, and he's part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
I look at how Sonoy has evolved, and what the draw is down there. We've gone down to eat down several times, and
yeah,
there is so much great future coming here. And you know, if we don't get active, get prepared, get ahead of the curve, we will be in trouble.
Yeah,
and. But I could sit here and talk with you for 3 hours and tell you all my ideas.
Yeah.
Because I've kept a book and a journal for years, a diary, if you want to call it, about what I like from this department, what this sheriff does, how he does it.
Wow.
How this department. At one time, I was responsible for 32 counties when I was on the skirt team for responsibility of being called. And I look back now and think about that. Now look at how many states I'm actually technically. My phone's gone off 4 times since I've been here with you, and I'm 24/7 to my company. I'm due for a new corporate car, but they're not going to give me one until I know whether I'm staying or not. And so it's just, you know, I feel like the little things are there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for things to line up. I'm ready for some of the good debates.
Yeah,
I know the chamber and other things will do some debates.
Yeah.
I've got some ideas. I know what's going on. I mean, there are things that I hear people tell me, you know, and saying this is what we need.
Right.
And that this is what works. And I think there's a lot of people at the sheriff's office that are, their heart is absolutely there and they're ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying by any means anything bad, but I think there's room for improvement.
Yeah.
And I think that I've got the energy and the push to go for it. I just, there's several things we can do that are easy. It's not going to cost a lot of money. And it just takes to bring the personality of everybody out.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, I go back to, I've never met Toby, but I've read his articles. I can hear, read the passion that he has for what he's done and what he can do and being that person. And there's 100 more of those same people right there if you can cut them loose and give them those tasks. I talked to a grandmother of a deputy the other day and what her concerns were. Same thing that my mom was when I was wearing a uniform. And I told her what worked for me. That when I came home, I parked my car where I could not see it. I had a closet that my uniform went in. All my gear was in there. And when I was off, I was off.
Mm-hmm.
And just made that separation.
Yeah.
And then you get a pager or you get a cell phone. And then you're stuck. And you can't leave it. I can't go take a shower without having to go check my phone to see if I've got an email or something.
Yeah.
And roughly, my direct responsibility is about 200 and really just under 300 drivers that they call me during the middle of the night. And I say, if it can wait until 8 o'clock, let it wait till 8. But if you need me, call me.
Yeah.
And I said, I've always tell them, give me a minute or two to get my sense of what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And if necessary, I need to get up and go downstairs so I can have the conversation. And then call me back in the morning and remind me what we talked about.
Right.
But, you know, it's like anything. And I know you're getting short on time. Yeah. But I think a lot of the position now is going to be development of others.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be about me or the title of sheriff or whatever else. It's about the community.
Yeah.
And I think I've, you know, gone over that. I'm starting to repeat myself about what my ideas are. But
no, I mean, and you kind of keep orbiting around that development. And I mean, and ultimately, I think maybe even the sheriff had mentioned that, where the ultimate goal is to leave a place better than it was when you first got there. And I think that's what it all kind of boils down to.
And I did listen to his podcast, and I think that's exactly what he's done.
Yeah.
I heard about, you know, I felt the passion of in the grief he had about the Rainwater case and those kind of things. And I grew up about, my grandfather and Lamar Potts were big friends. And I never knew my grandfather, never knew Lamar Potts. I knew Sheriff Massey.
Yeah.
And those kind of things that came on after that. But you know, I don't think anybody gets in that role for what they want to do. Sometimes when I was in college, I actually went to Sheriff Hammett, and part of one of my programs was to tour a facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and kind of met with him, and, you know, and I saw him probably for the first time in many, many years at a funeral of my first post commander. And I walked up to him and told him who I was, and I said, "Do you remember me?" And he said, "Yes," and that kind of thing, and that, and you know, those things are important.
Yeah,
I think a lot of the things that make me who I am are the people around here. I've always said I have a lot of mamas in this town.
Yeah,
and that, and I know that can say I've been a hellion and whatever else. I got, when we were in high school, my mama had a big Pontiac station wagon, and so I was driving everybody around, and we got some crazy idea. We wanted to go down Thrill Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did it a couple of times, and each time it got more and more. And I don't know, there's probably maybe 5 or 6 kids in the car, and we'd probably be in jail today for anything else that happened. But we started way back at past Elm Street School, going off down the hill, and I literally remember looking back in the rearview mirror, and there was somebody pinned against the upper roof of the car.
Right.
It landed like Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah.
No problem. We come up to the stop sign, and there's a Noonan police officer, Lieutenant Washington, Tate Washington, and everybody just said, "Oh, we knew where it was going to go."
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there, he's sitting there, no lights or anything like that. So I turn right, kind of go up, and of course he pulls in behind me, and blue lights. He said, take everybody home. have your daddy call me? And I said, thank you. So I did that. Everybody got out and everybody was, those kind of things. So I went home, and my mom, for some reason, she was gone somewhere for that week, somebody on vacation or something. And I went home and told my dad. And he called. He had that conversation. Mm. I looked at him and said, I know. I'm stuck at home. I won't leave the house for a month,
right,
kind of thing. My dad never told my mother. And I went one day and to the dentist, Dr. Yancey, and mm-hmm. told him the story. Well, if he didn't go and tell my mom.
Oh.
and it wasn't that I got in trouble for my mother.
No, your
dad. My dad
trouble.
Got in trouble for,
yeah.
for not telling
oh,
her
yeah.
about it. And then actually, when I went to Noonan, Tate was technically my training officer. And I never had talked to him about that before, and I mentioned it, and I said, do you remember that? And he said, yeah, I do. And he never saw us go off the hill. He just pulled up after we had landed and all that kind of stuff.
Oh.
So, you know, it's just one of those things that sometimes, you know, you ask me, I'm going to tell you
yeah.
the truth, but I've told my boss a couple of times, I said, if you don't ask me, I'm not going to tell you. But if you ask me, I'm bound to have to tell you. But
ask me the right question.
Yeah. And that. But in those kind of things, I tell the story when I was going through the Secret Service process. I got called up on a Friday and said, can you be in Atlanta for a polygraph? I said, sure, whatever it takes. And I went up there and I sat at an old wooden teacher's desk in a wooden chair strapped to the polygraph machine, and I was there for 6.5 hours asking back and forth questions.
Wow.
And it was revolving questions, you
yeah.
know, and they say, have you ever done anything that would make your family embarrassed? And I said, well, you know, you talk
yeah.
and talk and talk. And that, and I didn't feel anything coming into the questions, but the day that going home and that night, I couldn't sleep, all that good stuff. And
yeah.
they said, you know, I told the truth.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, yes, I've done this and done that. And no, I can say I have never done drugs.
Yeah.
Anything like that. And I'm very proud of that kind of thing. So I knew that I had a clear conscience.
Yeah.
And I said, it is what it is. And the guy calls me back up and said, hey, can you come back up? We got a couple of more questions. So I went back up. I was there for 2 hours. 2.5 hours, I think, tied to the machine again. And he asked the same questions, three questions over and over again, and in different formats. And I came away and I said, look, I've told you everything that I know that I've done
yeah.
and whatever else, and I know I'm not a bad guy and this kind of thing. And to come to find out, that was the strategy that they used. I'm not a great believer, and I think the polygraph machine is a tool,
mm-hmm.
but I never got the results. Of course, I got hired,
yeah,
and I got to see things that no one else can see, do things. I mean, I've stood in the Oval Office. I've held the door for the President of the United States. I've traveled with the President of the United States. You look at the White House, there's a heck of a lot more on the ground than you would ever imagine.
I can't even, yeah.
You would not believe.
Yeah.
And all these things that, you know, gone through. And, I think I don't have the 40-year career in law enforcement.
Yeah.
But I think I have got a super concentration very quickly.
Yeah.
I am just shy of 5,000 hours of law enforcement training.
Holy cow.
I've been through basic mandate at Fulton County Police Academy.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone through the Advanced State Patrol Academy in Forsyth. I've gone through FLETC for federal certification.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone through the Secret Service Academy. I've gone through being on SCIRT. I had to go to advanced training for accident investigation.
Yeah.
I hated math. I hated school.
Yeah.
But when I actually was able to apply it,
right.
to something that I could see, a skid mark, a vehicle, the physics of mass, it clicked for me. And I've got where I, for a time there, I could do the formulas in my head without a calculator. And really get really close without having a calculator to where I needed to be and know what, you know, just by looking and making measurements of what something did. So I went and got that. I had to get certification to even get interviewed for that position. I got in. And then the same thing with the feds. When I got my federal certification, I went and got everything else that I could possibly get. The only thing I'm not certified in the federal level is radioactive hazmat.
Oh, you're still young.
Well, it's one of the, you know, only thing they really wouldn't need. There's not that much of it. But one of the things that in the Secret Service, we had a radioactive team that monitors things.
Oh, sure.
There are several guys that were in my class who actually, after I left, they were actually gotten on the Obama detail. And I tell everybody, you know, I think one time I counted 26 cars in a caravan for the president when Bush. And, you know, you see all the Suburbans and you see all the police cars and the motorcycles and all that. Don't worry about the Suburbans. Don't worry about the police cars and all that stuff. Look at the other vehicles that don't stand out. Those are the guys that are going to be there to fight. The idea is when something happens to that motorcade is to get the president away. But there is a team in place. It's CAT, counter-assault team. Those guys are going to be there to play. And I had two of my classmates that got on CAT with Obama. And I've got one who actually, he got trained as a paramedic. And he was assigned to be the combat type medic for the detail. And they did that. And I would hear stories, and some of them I was in touch with here and there, or hear from other people what they were doing and where they were, and follow them on Facebook. And if the guy was in early December, if he was in Hawaii, I knew it wasn't much longer that the president was going to go to Hawaii for Christmas. And the same thing. And, you know, you just, you, when I went over to Doha to the Middle East, they gave me 24 hours notice that I was going. It was, you know, that kind of tight lip. And I was chosen, and, you know, dignitary passport and all those kind of things. And, you know, go get your stuff ready, pack your bag. And
how many of those guys have families? I mean,
all of them. And a lot of, and honestly, some of the guys, one of the guys that I went through the academy with, he married an agent. And they're constantly on opposite schedules. And they take off, you know, here and there and do a big trip, or they get assigned to a trip together. I mean, you don't stay in a bad place.
No.
I mean, the worst place I ever was, I went down to Miami for a couple of nights, and I stayed in the Hilton in Miami, and the air conditioner didn't work in the section of the hotel.
That's pretty rough.
But, you know, different stories, and, you know, we... You hear about the stories of the agents getting in trouble and all that good stuff, but we, I never been to Miami and never been to New York. I got to walk around New York and see all those things by myself, you know, and do whatever I wanted to do. And but one night we went out to South Beach and went to some club, and I mean, it's just a you know, amazing of things, and you know, it's just a great experience. I think at the time I knew that I was homesick and that, but I look back and think about it, and I know my dad always said that you know, my mom didn't want me to come home. She knew what I would, you know, see and see the world, but when it takes you 24 hours to fly across the world, and two times in my life when I worked for the Secret Service, I was awake for 32 hours or more on two occasions, constantly, not no sleep, absolutely, for 32 hours two times. And I was absolutely a zombie. And those kind of things. And a lot of that had to deal with travel and this and that. But the best plane ride I've ever been was on the military car plane. Have you ever seen that, where they put the limos in all that kind of stuff? We took out of, we flew out of Andrew and flew down to Miami. I never even knew we landed on the ground. It was that plane was just the big I can't remember the one that opens up on both sides, yeah. And you can put two limos on, mm-hmm. and all, and they had the vans and everything else. I never knew we even landed. It was that smooth.
That's incredible.
And, you know, we interacted with the Air Force and all those kind of things. And yeah. Some of my buddies are still there. And I look back at it, and I think, what's it been, almost, gosh, I guess it's been 16, 17 years since I did that. And some of those guys are close to retirement age.
Yeah, no kidding.
And, you know, the 20-year retirement with the feds. And, you know, you hear about the furloughs and all those kind of things, yeah. that happen. But they, you know, they seem to love it, and they're going to do well.
Yeah.
I've got one of the guys I went with now. He's now an instructor down at FLETC. He just, he moved down there just recently. And he's loving life. He's in retirement mode, but he's still, you know, working. And
yeah.
You keep in touch. It's amazing how, well, Facebook does for you to keep you connected to people.
Absolutely.
And in that, but I think my concentration in several different levels of things gives me an advantage.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think there's, you know, time for some new ideas.
Yeah.
Nothing against any of the guys running in that. I have respect for both of them. I never knew Tony very well until that, but he has actually treated me probably the best of any of them,
mm-hmm.
with just pure dignity and those kind of things. I've met Callaway. Just I like him.
Yeah.
In that, I think he's a very smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
In that, I've not met the. I've only met Doug Jordan.
Yeah.
Once. In that, and even when I met him, I had a good rapport with him, I think. But you know, it's just I think I've got some great ideas, and again, I could sit here and talk to you for over and over,
sure.
about things, but you know, my focus is going to be on the community and providing them a service that we can improve on.
Yeah.
And same thing with the deputies. I'm going to take them, I think, hopefully to a, you know, a new level.
Yeah.
There's a strong, like I've heard, you know, the sheriff talk about a strong base. He definitely has.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. He would not be where he is today going up without that.
Yeah.
He has a strong commitment to this community, and I plan on continuing that.
Very cool.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you again. I appreciate it.
No, awesome. Thank you. Been enjoyable.
Absolutely.
Well, there you have it, our conversation with Randolph Collins. And as stated earlier, we'll have several more episodes lined up with more candidates running for sheriff. Hey, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Mover Shakers and History Makers, and hope you come back for more. If you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe, and also be sure to visit our sponsor, Ace Beer Growlers, your source for Rockwood lump charcoal, cast iron skillets from Smithy Ironware, along with a variety of beers, wines, rubs, and cigars. Mention promo code PODCAST, get $5 off any purchase over $50 in the store. Visit the location on West Court Square right next to Piedmont Noonan Gym. Thanks again for listening, and hope to catch you again next time.